I always say, you gotta make it us. It can't be you and me. It can't be me and them. It has to be an us.
That's Amy Miller. If you've ever logged into LinkedIn, you've likely seen her content. She's a senior recruiter at Amazon and a LinkedIn top voice with over 25 years of experience hiring in tech. In today's episode, Amy shares her insights on building strong relationships with hiring managers.
And when you develop that us and you are working to solve the same problem, you can really have those critical conversations.
The importance of understanding the business problem.
That helps you determine what problem you're actually solving and then what kind of talent you need to solve the problem.
And how to stand in your power as a hiring subject matter expert.
I know what good recruiting looks like, and it's not this.
Welcome to Throw Out the Playbook, the podcast for recruiters tired of hearing that hiring is broken and ready to do something about it. I'm your host, Rona Pierce. First, let's hear about how Amy got started in talent acquisition.
Totally on accident. It was never the plan. I was working at Office Team. I had gone in and like registered back in the day in the 90s where you would just walk in with your little Charlotte Russe suit and your little paper resume, you know, on the ivory cardstock paper. And I just wanted to be like a receptionist or something. I was like, can I just have a job where I'm not like making hamburgers? And they actually made me their receptionist at the Office Team. And so I'm handing out, you know, applications to people on clipboards, chasing down my pens. And they said, you should be a staffing manager. And I said, y'all cry every day. I'm not doing that. That's no, get me out of here. So they sent me to Labor Ready, another staffing agency. I can't escape. I'm trapped. I can't get out of staffing. And I'm working at Labor Ready as a temp. They hired me full time in advertising, basically just pushing around paper. And I'm talking to my employment guide rep. For y'all that remember when we used to put ads in papers, we had something called the employment guide. Yeah, I'm just showing my age here. And my employment guide rep, I've never forgiven him, Steve Siglin, he said, you would be an amazing recruiter. And I said, what do recruiters do? Because I didn't make the connection. I didn't understand, like, staffing manager at Office Team was a recruiter. Yeah. So he introduced me to a woman. She was running a boutique staffing firm in Seattle. She hired me. More to that story, but we'll get into another time. And here I am, 25 years later, can't get out.
It's so funny. Every time I ask this question, it's never like, I went to school for recruiting and here I am. I think I've only, in all my years of hiring recruiters, have probably hired or spoken to like two or three people who like went to a boot camp or a school for recruiting. Everyone falls into it.
Right? And do you feel like that's been like a recent phenomenon? I feel like we've only seen that in maybe the last 10 years. I don't remember this being a thing even in like the early 2000s, but I definitely remember 2010, 2015, 2020 for sure. I was part of helping build some of those internal boot camps at large companies, right? Like, we're going to pluck you out of the finance department and make you a recruiter. So I don't know if it was a good thing or a bad thing in hindsight, because now we're all laid off all over the place. But it feels like a new phenomenon.
Yeah, for sure. It's always like, yeah, it's been in the recent years that I've seen that. So in all of your 25 years, I'm sure you've had a lot of different experiences. Why do you think building strong relationships with hiring managers is so important for recruiters?
Oh my gosh. I mean, there's so many reasons. I don't even know where to start. I think the number one reason is it's going to make your own life easier. Just from a purely selfish perspective. It really does make your job easier when you can be in lockstep with that business. And I always tell my teams or people that I'm mentoring or just, you know, anytime this comes up, I always say, you've got to make it us. It can't be you and me. It can't be me and them. It has to be an us. And when you develop that us and you are working to solve the same problem, you can really have those critical conversations. Because let's face it, hiring managers, as wonderful as they can be, most of them, most of the time, as great as they can be, they are not recruiting experts. They're just not. And so sometimes we almost have to save them from themselves. Like, yeah, you can't actually say, I'm only going to interview women. That's not something that you're allowed to say. appreciate your heart for wanting to diversify your team, but let's word that differently. And so, you know, we have to be able to kind of coach and educate and really help protect the business. But when you form that bond and you form that really solid business partnership, they're going to actually listen to you and they're going to respect your expertise that you're bringing. So there's ways to build that. And I'm sure we'll get into some of those details, but like far and away, number one reason, because it just makes recruiting better.
Yeah. 100% agree with you on that. And you talked a little about this, but how do you go about building that trust and that rapport with your hiring managers, like since the beginning of the relationship?
Yeah. I mean, I've definitely been known to bribe folks with baked goods. So you might see a LinkedIn post popping soon, or maybe, you know, after you get a chance to listen into this, you might go back, take a look at it. But, you know, I think it is all about data. And I would also say, I don't want to go too far down the data path because I think it's also important to understand your audience. What works with a sales manager looks very different than what works with an engineering manager and looks very different with what works with an HR or a finance manager and so on. So you have to really understand there's almost like this business love language you have to tap into with your hiring partners. And I know for engineers, I'll just use that as an example. That's been my world for the last, you know, decade plus now. It's about data and it's about like, hey, the numbers actually show us this. If we do A, we get B. If you try to add C, it ends up going sideways to X. And so you have to almost prove it, but prove it through data. And so, you know, if you're talking to a sales guy, you're probably talking about revenue. You're probably talking about, you know, improved cold calling rates. Like you have to speak their language. And so it starts by really understanding what is important to this person and how do they measure success? Because I need to take that concept of how they measure it, turn it into a recruiting measurement and then show it that way. And that develops the trust.
Amazing. That is so smart. Really speaking their language and like understanding what's important to them and making it important to you and helping them. Yeah. It's the art. I've always said recruiters have so much information about the company. You would be surprised. They know so much just for recruiting and like good recruiters, I should say. The ones that aren't
always a caveat.
Yes. So I know you're very passionate about hiring manager and candidate experience, right?
Yes.
Also heard you say that good consulting looks like bad customer service sometimes. Can you explain a little about what that means in terms of interacting with hiring managers?
I will tell you. So I'm gonna tell you the story of how this quote came into my life. And it has become my mantra. It has become my motto. It has become my words to live by. And it started with me literally in tears in my boss's office because I had just been screamed at. So backstory, I had just inherited a brand new team. So I'd been in tech recruiting for a minute. This was back at Microsoft. So this is many years ago, but I, you know, had a couple years under my belt. You know, I'm feeling pretty good, feeling pretty smart, thinking I've got this thing figured out. And my boss was like, hey, I really need you to take over this new business. Like they're challenging. They're, you know, the director has some very strong ideas about what partnership looks like. We just really need somebody like, that can really like get in and like not be afraid, so to speak, right? And the recruiter who had them before was amazing. Like it wasn't because she wasn't doing a good job. They needed her to do something else. So when they were thinking about, okay, who's the next victim for this director? Oh, we know Amy. She'll do great. So so I meet with the recruiter who's, you know, giving away the business and she's like, have fun. So she kind of knew what was coming. And long story short, this director had a very specific vision for how he wanted us to recruit. And that involved me attending mandatory meetings with his team. I want to say like 4 out of 5 days, like an hour or 2 hours, almost every day. And we would literally project LinkedIn Recruiter up on the big screen in a conference room and just scroll through. And the hiring managers would be like, oh, I like that one. I like that one. I don't like that one. And just kind of doing this random, like,
I'm scrolling my Amazon gift card, you know, wish list and like picking out things I like and don't like. Okay, plot twist, you can't just order candidates online. It doesn't work that way, right? So I'm like, this doesn't seem like a good use of anyone's time, especially mine. What are we doing? He wanted me to like make ticky notes, you know, ticky marks on a piece of paper. Well, we looked at 100 profiles and we liked 47 of them. And I said, this doesn't work. Like, I understand, you know, you want us to see what you think good looks like, but I'm not converting these people. They're not interested. They're not calling me back. Like, we're putting a lot of effort into something that has zero return. And he said, I don't care, do it anyway. And I said, no. And that was how the fight started. So he was very unhappy with me. Told my boss, you know, get her off of my business. I don't like her. She's disrespectful. She's all the things. And I'm in my boss's office, like literally in tears, thinking, I've done it. I'm going to get fired. This is the end of my recruiting career. And she says, Amy, I need you to understand, you provided some good consulting here. And sometimes good consulting looks like bad customer service. And I had this like light bulb moment of like, oh, now could I have delivered the message more gently? Oh, for sure. But she was right. And I needed to kind of stand in that, like, I know what good recruiting looks like and it's not this. So what we ended up doing is I came to half the meeting. So he was mad half the time and that's fine. And I spent 3 months gathering data. And so we tracked all of our effort from the, you know, two or three meetings a week we were doing. We tracked all of the effort that me and my sourcing partner, Paul, who is still a good friend of mine to this day. And we sometimes call each other like, remember that guy? We have fun with it a decade later. But I tracked all that data. And 3 months later, I go back and I say, okay, here it is. Here's a chart. Like I had bar graph. I had the whole thing. And I'm like, here's what we got. And we had zero hires from the, you know, kind of joint sessions, if you will. And we made 6 hires from the actual going out and sourcing and reviewing applicants kind of profile. And I said, so where would you like me to spend my time? And they're just kind of staring at the chart up on the big screen, like, really? And I, because I'm kind of a closet jerk, I hit the button and moved to the next slide. And I had a pie chart with the same data. I'm like, tell me where you want me to spend my time. And the director, this is the best part. The director looks at his team and says, why are you making her come to the office 3 days a week to meet with you? This makes no sense. Let her go recruit. Sir. But we just went with it. We're like, cool, moving on.
Oh my God. That's amazing. And like, it's just so many stories of how important it is to stand in your power as the subject matter expert in recruiting.
100%. And the way you deliver the message matters, right? Because I came in, you know, John Wayne, guns blazing, like I'm the new recruiter in town, and it did not land. So I've learned to really soften that. And I've learned to approach it from what are we together as a team trying to solve for? Me and you are buddies. Me and you are partners. We're pals. How are we together going to solve this? As opposed to, you know, younger Amy coming in going, you don't know what you're talking about. I do. Listen to me. Like that did not go well at all.
We all have those stories. I have one where I literally told a hiring manager, activity doesn't equal progress. Probably not the best line to use.
I love it though. I love it.
That one got me in a lot of trouble. So let's talk about intake calls. Everyone has a different name for it now and all of that. But intake calls, the call that you have when you start a search. Mm-hmm. So walk us through your ideal structure for an intake call with a new hiring manager.
Absolutely. So I have learned so many things over the years and like borrowed and stolen so many resources from different places. And I'm kind of laughing because my mentors, I consider them my mentors. I don't know if they would like that, but John Vlasalika and Carmen Hudson, they would freak out if they heard me call it intake session, but I still do. Cause like, that's just what we've called it for 25 years, right? Like leave me alone. That's what it is. Anyway, but something that I learned at Microsoft, again, going back to that, I learned so much about tech recruiting there, is the idea of like this four part, like this quadrant approach. And the top left corner is going to be the business. What do they do? And then the top right is like, what do they need? So you have, this is what the business delivers. This is what the business needs to deliver. Then you build out your talent map and your recruiting strategy based on that. So this whole quadrant thing, which I'm not able to visualize super well and explain super well, but just go with it, is really about starting from, what do y'all do? And that is such an important first step. And I think a lot of recruiters miss that because we want to immediately jump into, oh, hey, so you opened a role. Let's talk about your software engineer position that you need to hire for. No. I don't want to talk about that yet. I want to talk about what you're doing. Oh, you're building widgets. Got it. Okay. Tell me, what does that look like? So you're building 5,000 widgets a day. And so, okay. And how does your team support that? Oh, you build the internal manufacturing system where they put in part orders and numbers. Okay. Got it. And so you start creating this picture, which not only helps you as the recruiter kind of visualize the work that this new hire is going to do, but it gives you some snippets and some things that you can use to sell the job as well. And that's huge. That is such a missing element in so much of the recruiting stuff I'm sure you and I get when they're trying to recruit us. I'm like, what do you do? Like, okay, you need somebody to recruit. Like, I do that in my sleep, but why is this interesting? Why should I answer this? Anyway, so starting with, what does the business do? I also then want to understand, how does the current team makeup look? Because what you start to unpack there, and I've had this happen countless times, you start really peeling back the layers of like how this team is currently structured, what the bench strength looks like, who's ready for promo, who's loose in socket, who's an attrition risk. And then you sometimes even go, I don't think you need an engineer. I think you need a PM. Do we want to spend this headcount this way? And so you can sometimes actually influence them to think about that headcount spend and that recruiting ask differently, which again then leads to a better recruiting strategy, more targeted searching, and just a better long-term fit. Because how many times have we been midstream, knee-deep in a recruiting process? Hey, here's six great engineers. Oh gosh, you know, we've been thinking about it for 3 months and we realize all on our own, we actually need a PM. We could have had that conversation 3 months ago.
Yes.
So I encourage all of my sourcers, everybody I know who, you know, is involved with like that initial intake, get in and understand the business first. That helps you determine how, what problem you're actually solving, and then what kind of talent you need to solve the problem. Second thing very quickly I'll mention as well. Once we get to that, we've absolutely defined the rec. We know this is the right rec. We know this is the right job description. Because let's face it, the job description that ends up getting posted is not usually the one that they give me, because sometimes it's a little work, a little finessing, right? But once we've identified that, I'm going to go back with labor market insights. And there's lots of tools that can do this. I have a favorite I won't mention because they don't pay me to mention it. But I'll just say, you know, there's one I really like. And I will actually use that job description to run a search and bring it back and say, hey, look, there's 150 people in a local market that can do this. This is going to be tricky. Where are we flexible? How long are we willing to wait to find the right person? How much are you willing to invest in helping me with cold outreach and referrals and things? So I do kind of a dual approach. The first stage is just help me understand what you're doing and what we're solving for. And then the second is, here's a good overview of the market and what we're up against as we go out and try to find these people.
And, you know, after the years, anyone who's an experienced hiring manager has their ideas of who their ideal candidate is or what the ideal candidate profile looks. How do you deal with situations where someone has such a specific ideal candidate profile that it's might be unrealistic?
Oh, for sure. And that's where like that market mapping is so helpful. And I've done this live. In fact, this just happened like a week ago, maybe last week, I think it was. And I love this manager. One of my absolute favorites, somebody that I actually was their recruiter when they joined the company. So we're tight, like we're buddies. And this manager set up a meeting with my team and was like, look, we've had this role for 3 months. We've had some interviews. They haven't, you know, netted us what we need. What can we do? And so I loved that she was actually taking a really proactive approach. I felt a little bad because I'm like, oh, we should have called this meeting, but we didn't, but it's fine. So we're in this meeting and we're trying to like kind of talk through what we've seen. And I said, you know what? We haven't done this for a while. And I grabbed that job description. I threw it in one of those tools. Girl, when I tell you, we got zero results. And I was like, how have we even managed to get people to interview? Because this is scary. What am I looking at? But it was great because we all kind of had this like aha moment of, well, wait a minute. Are we wording things in a weird way? Are we asking for something that maybe there's a better way to, there's an adjacent tool or some kind of different keyword or concept or something we should use. And so we started playing around with it. And within 10 minutes, we left that meeting with seven very, very targeted profiles that the manager's like, I would get on the phone with that person today. Hey, somebody wants to talk to you today. You know, and so it just sometimes is a little trial and error to kind of play with the tools and play with the concepts and play with the must-haves so that you can show them, I understand you have this persona in your head and I get it. But you've already hired that person. They already work on your team. They're special. We get it. We love them. Please promote them. But now let's talk about how we're going to supplement that person's skills. You don't want an army of Amys. You want an Amy. You want a Bob. You want a Jill. You want a Ronna. You want lots of different flavors and personalities and approaches and perspectives. And that's also sometimes needs to be explained.
Yeah. I love this conversation. This is one of my favorite topics ever. And I just love intake calls and how crucial they are. And I get really mad when someone doesn't want to do an intake call with me. I literally have stopped, or with anyone on my team, I've stopped searches. I'm like, unpublish.
Yep.
No intake call has happened.
Yep. I love that. And that is so important. You hit on something so important. We have to be willing to walk away from bad searches. And I know, I understand, I can make the argument as well on both sides, right? If you're an agency, you're not getting paid until you fill it. How can you just not search? I'm not going to get paid, right? So that's one thing. Internal, so many people think that internal recruiters don't have the power to say no. Oh, I'm not saying it's easy. I'm not saying there's not going to be a consequence or two, but what pain do you want to suffer? Do you want to have to explain why you're not doing a search, or do you want to have to keep beating your head against the brick wall of that search? So that is such an important thing. And I hope if there's only one takeaway from this, I hope that recruiters develop that same backbone that you just talked about. It's so important.
Yes. And also have a good, like who your leader is, who your TA leader is very, very important. That's a whole conversation for a whole other day.
It is. What makes a good recruiting manager?
So beyond the initial intake call, how do you maintain like clear communication with the hiring manager throughout the search?
So something else that I developed in the last few years, and again, kind of beg, borrowing, and stealing from other business groups and other recruiters and all that, I've created nothing, but I sure do leverage a lot what I've learned over the years. But something that has been really helpful is we actually apply a prioritization matrix. So we have what we have a P0 through P3. So there's four categories. P0 is like top priority, hair on fire, building will cave in if we don't hire this person. And that comes with certain expectations. The hiring team meets with us at minimum once a week. We have a standing, you know, it could be like a Slack channel or something. So I've done that before where we have like just regular daily communication, you know, updates and questions and things like that. We have SLAs on like resume reviews. You're going to get back to me within 24 hours. You're going to, you know, fast track interviews within 72 hours, what have you. So there's some very specific expectations that are assigned to each of those priority levels. And so I let the hiring managers choose. Here's your menu. Here's your, you know, your options, what you can choose from. If you don't want to spend time with me every single week and abide by, you know, the expectations and the SLAs of a P0, that's okay. But then it's not a priority for me, right? I will make this as much of a priority as you do, Mr. Hiring Manager or Mrs. Hiring Manager. That's what I say. I will say that out loud to them. So by allowing them to opt in and understand like, okay, this is how Amy sets up her workday and her team's work. They can't be mad at me. Like you pick that off the menu. That's why I'm holding you accountable. Do you want to change it? Because we could do that.
I love that. I love that. Coming from my project manager, my software project manager background, I might borrow the whole menu, like priority plus menu SLA thing. I love that one.
It's a game changer. And think about like any time you've ever had to put in like a help desk ticket, right? Like what's the level of severity? It's kind of along those lines. And so it works really well with engineers. Like it's speaking their language again, right? Which we kind of talked about earlier. It's like, oh yeah, I understand. This is like a level one ticket. Got it. I better get back to Amy.
I'm sure there's been challenges in this priority and like navigating that and staying on the same page. Can you tell me about a time like there was a challenge with being on the same page with the hiring manager and how you resolved it?
Yeah. So, you know, you touched on something so important, which is the solid TA leadership, right? And having a good, strong manager that backs you up, a good, strong partner that can help unblock. We need that same thing on the business side. And so I think it's really imperative that we form relationships at the highest possible level. And so the example specifically that I think maps really well to this is from a business group I was working with many years ago, not the one with the crazy director, but a different group. And I had a monthly meeting with the VP that, you know, he was not hiring. Like he had directs who had directs that were hiring. So I'm way down, you know, in the weeds with his directors and managers, but he's a VP over this massive, you know, business group. But I still met with him once a month and gave him just a very, you know, high level overview of hiring. Here's what's happening in your world, you know, past your race, blah, blah, blah. He had a manager just going absolutely rogue. And this manager refused to meet with recruiting, refused to work with us, only wanted to hire internal. And that's a choice, right? I never like tell managers they can't only have internal open roles. There's sometimes good justification for it, and that's fine. But what we found is this manager was actually moving people from their previous team in another country. So now we're doing all of these like L1 transfer after L1 transfer after L1 transfer, tons of money in relocation, tons of candidates passed over, even local internal candidates passed over, because this guy was essentially rebuilding the team that he had in a previous life at the same company. And I flagged it to the VP. And I said, look, it is not my business to tell somebody how to build their team, but I'm noticing some trends here. I'm not sure this is what's best for the organization through many lenses, not the least of which is diversity, by the way. Just want to highlight this to you. If it's not a problem for you, it's not a problem for me, but I'm just saying this could be. When I tell you this man lost his headcount in 3 seconds flat, okay, the VP was like, you're doing what? And sat him down and was like, this is not how we're going to work. You can work with Amy like this, or we will just like reposition your headcount. And this manager was not happy with that. And so we ended up using that headcount differently. So very extreme case. But it goes back to, again, like really understanding the business problem we're trying to solve here. And that was a classic example of this person building a team of software engineers and not thinking about the balance. And this particular team had this like triangle approach of like scientists, engineers, and PMs. And this person was so heavy on the software engineer because of the way they were building their team that it was actually creating some other downstream issues that we might not have caught sooner had I not raised a recruiting flag, which was also kind of interesting.
That's such a great story. I'm sure a lot of people can relate to it. And again, I guess we'll say this a lot during this interview, standing in your power as the subject matter expert.
100%. 100%.
So important.
I'm not an expert on coding. I'm not an expert on any of this tech stuff. I always joke I'm the least technical tech recruiter on the planet. I can barely like, I still haven't changed the time in my car from daylight savings time. I don't even, I can't. I have to Google it every time, and I just haven't had time yet. And it's what, been a month. But, you know, but that's okay because I am a recruiting expert. I am really good at recruiting.
Exactly. So we've spoken a little about data. Lots of people love it, I'm going to talk about metrics that some recruiters love and others hate. Ooh. But in your experience, how does having a strong relationship with a hiring manager, does it impact things like time to fill, time to hire, quality of hire? What are your thoughts on that?
So, and I, you know, I have such a love-hate with those metrics in particular. I really do. And I think where I struggle is I am all about it as long as it's a shared metric. I will raise 10 kinds of heck if you try to hold me accountable for time to fill, but you're not equally holding the hiring manager accountable. Like, I will not have it, because I can only move as quickly as the manager. I can only be as effective as my partner, because that's what they are. They are my partner. I need them as much as they need me, and we can't do this work without each other. So it has to be a shared metric. And I think that we also have to understand the things that can skew it. And this is where I struggle, because I could close and reopen that rec and you'd never know. All of a sudden, whoops, starting at zero again. Only took me 3 months. Look how good I am. Oh, no. We had it open for a year before you shut it down and reopened it, right? And so you really have to be careful with all of these metrics to make sure that, number one, you're holding the right people accountable. It's usually more than one person. And then number two, your data is super clean. And this is one of my, I don't want to turn this into an ATS discussion. Good Lord. Not like I don't have enough of those every day. But this is where, like, data hygiene in the ATS is so important. And it's also why I still, to this day, have my own spreadsheet. I track everything manually, because it's the only way I can know with 100% certainty and accuracy that these numbers are correct. And the things that I track the most, the metrics, if you will, that matter most to me, pass-through rates. I want to know how many resumes that I actually have to look at before I got people I could send to the hiring manager. I want to know how many people that I presented the hiring manager actually took action on. I want to know how many people made it through the interview process and then, of course, got and accepted offers. So I track each of those steps very, very carefully, and I monitor pass-through rates literally on a weekly basis. And I know any wild swings. We went really high here, really low there. I will compare different businesses to each other. This team's doing amazing. This team's having some struggles. What's going on? Like, you can learn so much just by paying attention to those numbers and then start really peeling back the layers of, like, what's driving that change? What drove that drop? And frankly, if the numbers are too good, that could also be a flag in a weird way. Like, I know people kind of go, what do you mean? Why don't I want 100% of my offers accepted? I mean, maybe you do, but I look at offer declines as like a lesson. I made enough offers to the right people. I'm going to lose sometimes. Like, if I'm going after the best of the best, these people have 5, 6, 10 offers in hand. Of course, I'm going to lose some, right? So it's like those lessons, once you start peeling back the data, that are so, so valuable and can help you refine your strategy too.
I love the whole shared metric concept. That's how I roll. Some people love it and some people hate it, but it is shared. What's one piece of advice that you would give to recruiters who are struggling to build strong relationships with hiring managers?
Yeah, I mean, you could definitely try the baked good approach. I've never met anyone who didn't love a cupcake, so I'm only partially kidding. I think, so a valuable question, I probably don't ask as much as I should anymore, because I've hired all my hiring managers, so like I already have like this built-in partnership now, which is super terrifying as much as it is exciting, because then they see a different side of me. I'm like, remember when I made your offer? But no, I think starting the conversation or even resetting, maybe you're coming off of 3 months of just drama, right? And that's what happened with me and this other director once upon a time. Walk me through the best recruiting partnership you've ever had. I'd love to understand. You've been hiring for a while now. So this is, of course, assuming this manager is an experienced hiring manager. What did that recruiter do that was so valuable to you? And you don't want to, like, I'm always cautious of setting up a negative. I don't be like, what am I doing wrong? Because then they're just going to hurt your feelings.
Yes.
If you can position it as like, what does good look like? give me some real world examples of recruiting experiences you've had that resonated with you. Then you start understanding what's important to them. And there's going to be some managers. I had a manager who answered this. I am not even kidding. My recruiter left me alone. Said, fair enough. Here's how we're going to solve that. And so we contracted that I was going to send an update email. I was going to have very specific call to action. His admin would reply to that email with his answers, and we were good. And so, you know, sometimes you have to find an associate. You have to find a proxy, right, for somebody who maybe isn't into it. But that's okay. We were able to solve it through that. And then eventually we got a couple people on his team promoted. So I had what I always called his lieutenants. I'm like, I'm going to go deal with so-and-so's lieutenants, because they were able to get things done, move the needle on things. And so you just kind of, sometimes you just have to respect that, like, this person ain't in it, and that's okay. We're going to find a different approach. But if I had not asked that question, and if I had not allowed him the space to, like, full on say, I don't want to deal with you, we would have never got there. And it wasn't personal. It's just, this person is, like, big time, like, techie, way in the weeds of hardware design, and just did not want to deal with me.
So we've spoken a lot about what the recruiters should do in the relationship, but mm-hmm. it's a relationship. It's a two-way street.
Yeah.
For any hiring managers watching, what are the top things you think that they should do to foster a positive and a strong yeah. relationship with their recruiters?
I think, so I had a director once that I worked with. And we only worked together for about a year. I mean, he actually left the company for, you know, nothing to do with us, thankfully. I didn't chase him out or anything. But, you know, he had some other things, you know, that pulled him away. But we only worked together for a year. And I tell you, he stands out, even with that finite period of time, as one of the absolute best partners I've ever had. And the first time we met, he said, Amy, I want you to understand my recruiting philosophy. I said, laid on me. I would love to hear this. He said, if your recruiter's not your best friend, you're doing it wrong. And I was like, whoa, did we just become best friends? But that was his approach, right? And obviously we're talking on a professional level. It's not like I was going to dinner at his house or anything, but you know, we developed this really great rapport. We're still friends to this day. Every now and again, you know, we'll text each other hi or what have you. I mean, he's lovely, but he positioned our partnership in that way. Like, he and I were lockstep. We were friends. We would have, even when he wasn't hiring and it was just his teams doing all the hiring, he still maintained a weekly meeting with me because he just wanted to check in and see how I was doing, see how things are going. It wasn't even necessarily like, how many hires did we make? He'd be like, how are you? Are my people being good to you? Are you getting what you need? Are there rocks I can move for you? So approaching it from this perspective of like, I want to be there to back you up and support you, even when we're not directly recruiting together, was so important. And I will also tell you, hiring managers, please understand recruiters get beat up all the time. Like, we are constantly being yelled at, we're being hung up on, we're being dragged on the internet. If you are nice to us, we are like poor abused children who are just like so grateful for the kindness. You know? Like, I would crawl through glass to go find someone for this director. Like, he was that awesome. So it's really like, be nice to us, number one. That's really all you have to do. But then I think, you know, all kidding aside, the next level of that is helping us solve the problem together. And I say recruiting at its heart is solving business problems through talent. That's another motto, right? I live by that. So help us understand what the business problem is. Yes, the rec is important. Yes, the hiring need is important. Of course, we have to know what we're looking for. But help us understand how it solves the problem. Help us understand how it sells more widgets, how it builds more, you know, product, whatever it is. Like, that is such a game changer for recruiting, I think.
One last question.
Yeah.
If you had to go back to your baby recruiter self, what advice would you give yourself about building effective relationships with hiring managers?
Talk less. I know that sounds crazy because I've probably talked 90% of our conversation. I'm a talker. I'll fill the space. What awkward silence. Amy's here. She won't shut up. But I think I tried to cover my insecurities and my lack of knowledge by talking too much. And I really should have shut up a lot sooner, asked more questions, and listened more intently, right? Because it really did take a lot of trial and error. And even going back to, you know, the original story with the bar graphs and the pie charts and the fights, you know, I kind of came in guns blazing a little bit. Even 15 years into the industry and being a fairly tenured recruiter, I was still taking that, like, I know everything approach. And I really should have been more humble. And I should have kind of paused and say, well, wait, when you're asking me to do this, what is the expected outcome? What are we solving for? And had I taken that approach much sooner in my career, I probably would have gotten a lot further, a lot faster.
In this episode, Amy shared valuable advice for recruiters looking to build strong relationships with hiring managers. Some key takeaways. Understand the business problem you're trying to solve and speak the hiring manager's language. Be willing to walk away from bad searches and stand in your power as the subject matter expert. Develop a priority matrix with clear expectations and SLAs for each priority level. Leverage your data. Track pass-through rates and monitor data hygiene in your ATS to refine your recruiting strategy. Ask hiring managers about their best recruiting partnerships to understand what's important to them. If you want more actionable advice, like the advice shared in this episode, I write a weekly newsletter for TA professionals who want to take a more strategic approach to recruiting. You can sign up at throwouttheplaybook.com/newsletter. That's throwouttheplaybook.com/newsletter. The link is in the show notes. If you're enjoying Throughout the Playbook, leave us a 5-star review. Reviews help other listeners find us. And by all means, click share and send Throughout the Playbook to anyone you think might be into it. Thanks for listening, and I'll chat with you next week.